This is AgriPulse Open Mic, sponsored by the crop insurance industry. Protecting over 272 million acres of farmland across the U.S., crop insurance is key to the financial stability of America's farmers and ranchers, enabling them to supply our country with food and fiber. Crop insurance, providing peace of mind now and for the future of agriculture.
Joel, welcome to AgriPulse Open Mic.
Pleasure to be with you.
The Brazilian Sugarcane Industry Association, also known as UNICA for short, has been more than a casual observer of the ethanol tax and trade policy debate here in the United States. In fact, UNICA has been an active participant. There are those in this country that have tried to put their own spins on what Brazil's motives are. I think I want to ask you first off to let you describe what UNICA's goals and objectives are in this debate here in the United States.
Here's where we come from. Let's put things in context. Sugarcane ethanol is a clean, affordable, renewable fuel that can reduce America's dependency on imported fossil fuels, can save consumers at the pump, and really diversify our resources in a way that creates more opportunities for all. And I would say at last, it helps reduce greenhouse gas emissions. I realize that that is a contentious debate in terms of climate change, but I think regulators after regulators, most recently the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, have confirmed that cane ethanol can reduce emissions by over 60% compared to yesterday's gasoline. I think one of the points of here, and one of the things that we've been trying to stress here in the United States, is that we've had both in Brazil and the United States policies to encourage renewable fuels. The policy in both countries has worked, and our experience in Brazil has been when the government has stepped away from subsidizing and incentivizing the industry. In the case of Brazil, it happened about 15, 20 years ago, that process, and in the U.S. it still continues today, is that the industry is better off and that consumers are better off. Because when businesses compete, we drive down the price at the pump. And that is good for consumers. It also is good for taxpayers because taxpayers like you and me are not footing the bill for these subsidies. So that transition, and one of the things we've been saying, and I wrote a column in a number of newspapers recently, I think after three decades of subsidies and incentives, ethanol, whether it's corn or any other type in the first generation, is ready to go it alone. That doesn't mean that the government should stop supporting second generation, should continue supporting fossil fuels. I think the government needs to get out of the business of supporting technologies that are mature, and needs to get into support the second and third generation biofuels. And I think one of the real important things to understand is that what we want to move away from is fossil fuels. That is ultimately the objective, and we think that a competitive ethanol market in the United States would be beneficial for both American producers and American consumers.
As Congress prepares to return to Washington for a four-week session before heading off back home to campaign, where do you see this ethanol tax and trade policy debate going?
Clearly, the window is closing in terms of how much Congress can do this year. Our position has been, I think, pretty clear, is that we think it's time for the government to get out of the business of subsidizing ethanol, and more importantly, we think that it is time to give consumers choice by reducing the 54 cent per gallon tariff on ethanol. The debate, as you know, is really mired in what is the cost of these subsidies and so forth. We have encouraged, in fact, we provided a grant to Iowa State University to look at the cost benefits of this, and their findings were pretty clear that eliminating the subsidies, the VTEC, the 45 cent per gallon tax credit, really have no short-term impact on U.S. corn and ethanol demand. That's because Congress already mandates the use of these fuels, and we're really not going to see any real change, and that it would also mean that we are not going to spend as taxpayers $6 billion a year to encourage, fuel suppliers, fuel distributors, gasoline retailers to buy a product that they're already required to buy. I would say I think Congress has a choice. The best thing I think they can do in this case is actually to just, not do anything. Let both of the tax credit and the tariff expire, then they would both be set at zero, and let's see where things go. I don't think there's going to be any significant shift, and all there's going to be is consumers save, taxpayers save a little money, and there'll be a little more competition.
Short of complete elimination, could Unica be satisfied with an equalization of the import tariff with the blender's credit?
Absolutely, and we have made this clear. We think these policies are unnecessary, but should Congress decide and find the money to pay for it, we think a reasonable and next best solution is let there be parity. And I know the Renewable Fuels Association and, in fact, even Growth Energy Chairman Jeff Bruin have publicly said that they would support parity. And I would encourage, and parity being whatever value the blender's credit, currently upset at 45 cents, that be the value of the tariff, if that's in really what the policy was all about in the beginning. If that's the case, then I'd love to see those two organizations stand with me on Capitol Hill's Congress do this, because that is clearly not what is happening now. The House Ways and Means Committee has a bill set forth that reduces the blender's credit to 36 cents per gallon, but leaves the tariff at 54 cents. Now, that is a step back in time.
Critics of Unica's arguments say that all sounds good, an open, competitive market, but let's don't kid ourselves here. There are subsidies in place in Brazil that support its ethanol industry. How do you respond to that?
If you go and try to find where there are subsidies in Brazil, first, Brazil mandates the use of ethanol in gasoline at the blend of 20% to 25%. Okay, we actually like higher blends in Brazil, and it works, and it's worked for 30 years. If some purists will say, well, that's a subsidy because you're requiring the consumption of that. Well, so guilty as charged. I think requiring the use of renewable fuel that is more than half lower carbon than gasoline is a pretty darn good policy, whether it's made in the U.S. in Brazil or not. Secondly, some people say, well, hey, the Brazilian government has some lower interest rates for financing new plants. And I says, well, that's true. The government offers a 12% a year interest rate to 12% a year interest rate to some facilities, whether they're domestically owned or foreign owned. Well, anybody in the U.S. who wants to go to Brazil and tap into a 12% interest rate, be my guest. I don't think that anybody in U.S. agriculture is ever going to pay even half of that here in the U.S. The issue is that interest rates are extremely high in Brazil, and there's very limited finance, and so the government's come in that way. So if that's a subsidy, again, guilty as charged. I don't think anybody is rushing to Brazil to tap into 12% interest rates for their project. So ultimately, when you look at this, what you see is there's folks looking back at what happened in the 1980s and say, well, Brazil did provide some incentives to the industry. We're not talking about, in our view, what happened in the past. The U.S. has spent $45 billion over the last three decades in terms of a blender's credit. If you look, nobody's trying to say, well, was that a waste of money or not. The reality is, what should we do from now on? And in Brazil, what happened was in the 90s, the government said, hey, we're going to cut you guys off. And what the industry, the sugarcane industry, said is, at the time, probably there were quite a few who didn't like it, but the industry learned to compete, and our yields went up, our production went up, our exports went up, and guess what? Consumers in Brazil and abroad benefited from low-carbon advanced renewable fuels like sugarcane ethanol. So we are happy for any scrutiny over Brazilian subsidies, but we think after anybody looks at it carefully, we'll see that it's pretty much a non-story.
As you're well aware, indirect land use is a big part of the biofuels debate on Capitol Hill. And there are those who say that Brazilian sugarcane yields have not been rising as fast, particularly since about 1998 or 9, as U.S. corn yields have been rising fast, and therefore allowing Brazilian sugarcane a favorable treatment that would accelerate deforestation in the Amazon region. How do you respond to that?
In the case of Brazil, we've also been seeing great yields. I mean, if you look over the same time period, and you understand how to account for yields in sugarcane, which are different than corn, you'll see that we've had about a 2 to 3% growth since that same period. So it's been fantastic yields. It has not been growing as fast as corn in the last few years. That's just the nature of cane. It takes a longer period of time. We have not tapped into the biotech potential, genetically modified and otherwise. And so I think this is something that a lot of Brazilian cane farmers are very jealous of the U.S. Agriculture. But it is just, you know, I think in both cases they've got a good story to tell. And both of them, as there's more scrutiny, we'll see that there's absolutely no relationship between deforestation, whether in Malaysia, Amazon, or elsewhere, with the production of biofuels. In Brazil, we grow cane about 2,000 miles from the Amazon.
The Environmental Protection Agency is supposed to decide by the end of September whether or not it will allow E15 blends for use in 2007 and newer model vehicles. Brazil crossed this bridge quite some time ago, and now the mandate can be anywhere between 20% and 25%. How did Brazil successfully navigate this minefield?
The reality is the E20 blend really kicked in the late 1970s, early 1980s. We started with some regions, and then made it nationwide in the early 1980s. The reality of today is when we give consumers the choice at the pump, meaning that there is both ethanol and gasoline at every fuel station in Brazil. Notice I don't call them gas stations. We need to get out of the business of calling gas stations fuel. We need to call them fuel stations, not gas stations. And then we give people flex, make sure that they have flex fuel cars. And in Brazil, the way that was done is we got the automakers to at least commit to selling flex fuel cars without, in the case there was a need for a mandate, but they agreed to sell flex fuel cars without any change in price from flex fuel, non-flex fuel, which I'm glad to see GM and Ford doing a lot of that here in the United States. I'd love to see the Japanese automakers do the same. And when we give them that choice, people automatically will choose the most competitive fuel. In Brazil, we've been lucky to be able to offer ethanol at a price lower than gasoline, even including the BTU loss. And that is really what has taken off.
Finally, put this ethanol debate into a larger context of bilateral relations between the United States and Brazil. Do you find it easier to have this discussion with the U.S. government, lawmakers on the Hill, the Obama administration, in light of the WTO ruling against the U.S. cotton program?
I have tried to avoid getting mired into these bilateral trade disputes other than the ones that are limited to our industry. Clearly, there has been a lot of tension surrounding the cotton dispute between Brazil and the United States. I would hope that we can find a solution for the ethanol tariff issue this year so that we're not down that path going forward. I think the government of Brazil has made it pretty clear that their patience is running out and that they expect resolution this year in terms of the ethanol tariff before they decide to pursue another trade case, which I think is going to be bad for both sides and bad for the broader cause of biofuels. But it may be a necessity because if you know, that's ultimately the rule of law process.
Joel Velasco is the Brazilian Sugarcane Industry Association's chief North American representative. Joel, thanks so much for joining us on AgriPulse Open Mic.
Thanks so much.
AgriPulse Open Mic has been sponsored by the crop insurance industry, protecting over 272 million acres of farmland across the U.S. Crop insurance is key to the financial stability of America's farmers and ranchers, enabling them to supply our country with food and fiber. Crop insurance, providing peace of mind now and for the future of agriculture.